There's so many things tonight that we wanted to kind of put together in areas of dealing with. But this would be for tomorrow morning, but I just really felt led at the last minute to throw this in. And that is the three major causes for someone to have a demonic problem. There are three things, seems to be three major areas. And I think you'll find that basically your conservative theologians would all agree that these are the basic three areas. The first is ancestral involvement in demonic practices or whatever, the ancestral type thing, where our ancestors have given themselves over to that type thing. And you have that in Psalms 106, 36 through 38, 1 Corinthians 10, 20, Exodus 20, 3 through 5. And you really see that if you've adopted children. You know, and you have your own children, and you have that adopted child in your family, and you're wondering, what's going on here? It is so different from the rest of the family, and yet they were all exposed to the same teaching, the same family, the same everything, and yet you see these characteristics, and you say, well, alcoholism must be in the genes. Well, the only bad genes are Levi's. It just isn't genes. There's something more there than a genetic thing that's going on. Now, the world is trying to come up with whatever, but we realize, as you read Scripture, five different times in the Old Testament, we're told that the sins of the parents can affect a family to five generations. But remember, there's a positive thing in Psalms. It says the righteousness of parents can affect children for what? Five generations. So we're either affecting our families what? For godliness. You know the sign of a godly man? One of the signs of a godly man are his grandchildren walking with the Lord. That's a good sign. And that's why Hudson Taylor is a neat example, isn't he? With his grandchildren and leadership of the mission and so on. It's a good sign there. Now, it doesn't mean that every child and, you know, of every whatever, but basically, the children love the Lord. Our granddaughter went to kindergarten in a Christian school in Rhode Island, and it was, they go to a hellfire damnation church, you know what I mean? They really preach it, and you're sitting there, and you can smell the smoke, and you better go forward. And so the school is hellfire damnation, and she comes home all fired up. And she's got a little brother that's 4 years old. And she comes home and she looks at her brother because she's accepted the Lord. And she said, Jeremiah, do you want to accept the Lord as your Savior? He said, nope. She says, you want to burn in hell? So she was just burning this little kid in hell. And my daughter said, you know, kind of leave him alone. She said, he's not ready yet. Well, he heard her. So anytime he says, I'm not ready yet. So one day, she and her husband were in another part of the house, and our oldest granddaughter came running, and she says, come quick, he's ready. And he's real shy, and he called us on the phone and told us, and he got up in his church and told people, so we knew that it had to be a genuine thing for him, because he's not the kind to get up in front of people to say anything. And he wanted to do that, to let people know that he was now trusting the Lord. So we have the ancestral thing. The other thing is personal involvement. And we'll go over this tomorrow, but I think it's important. We see this tonight as we go into the materials we're going into. Personal involvement, dabbling in the occult, and I can't tell you how much dabbling in the occult is going on. I mean, you think of, I don't want to be offensive, but I want to tell you, Waxaw is nowhere, isn't it? I mean, is this really somewhere? I mean, sure, it's somewhere, but it's really somewhere nowhere. It's somewhere that's nowhere. And you have people digging up graves. You have animals found with blood drained out of them. And you find Satanistic altars out here. And this is nowhere. What's it like somewhere? And it's no wonder these kids dabble in this, and then all of a sudden they find themselves struggling with powers they don't know what to deal with, And these kids are coming unglued. And it's just literally epidemic. It's unbelievable. Warrenton, Missouri, where CF headquarters, is another somewhere that's nowhere. And the kids came home, and they learned Bloody Mary. Now, if we have young kids here, many of them know Bloody Mary. And Bloody Mary is the chant that you do to call up a spirit in your bedroom mirror. And the kids were afraid to look in the mirrors. So you're having, and this is in the third and fourth graders we're talking about, are learning. I didn't even know about spirits. And I came from an ungodly family in the third and fourth grade. I mean, I didn't know about spirits all through high school. I didn't know anybody dabbling in this and doing it. Kids will tell you who are in the covens in the high school right here. We know the kids in the covens that are worshiping Satan in high school and in junior high. It's unbelievable, isn't it? I mean, it's unbelievable. In nowhere, you've got them here, and you take school system, college after college, you have got unbelievable amount of kids involved in the occult trying to get power. Did I tell you about the little book I got in our library? I was in our library, and we have a little branch. I mean, Sioux City isn't really somewhere either, but it's more somewhere than here. And I was in our branch library that, you know, was in a mall. Well, you know, when you have a branch library in the mall, it's not much. They had three of the same books on witchcraft called Beginning Witchcraft. And I was going to Mexico City to speak just before Christmas. It was last November. So I thought, I'll grab this book out to see what is Beginning Witchcraft. Well, when I started looking at it, it was written on the level of a junior higher. And this book started with simple witchcraft techniques, then mind control, teaching a young person how to control other people's minds by putting thoughts in their minds, making them do things. And they suggested you do things in a line at a grocery store. And how to do it, I'm not going to tell you how to do it, but how to do it so that you can get someone to turn around and look at you and begin to get people to do things. And then it ended with how to draw your circles to call spirits to manifest in your circle, and how to keep your folks from finding out and all those kind of things. This is a junior high level. There were three of them. I really wanted to steal them. And I wasn't sure what voice was telling me that. But I thought, how can I do evil to do good? But I just thought, oh Lord, don't let any kid find these books. Because you take that book and you go through it, you are going to have power. The wrong kind. The wrong kind of power. The third area is by transferal. Demonic spirits transferring from someone who has demons into someone else. One of the ways is sexually. Demons transfer sexually. Now, if a woman's married to a witch doctor and she gets saved, you don't tell her to divorce her husband. Because God will what? Protect her, because she's being biblical, right? God will protect her. But isn't it interesting that Proverbs says, if a man visits a prostitute when he leaves her house, he will never be the same, and his feet have just gone on to the paths of hell. It's interesting when you read that. Did I mention this? The Vietnam soldiers that we deal with? When you do the direct confrontational method, often people see the spirits in their mind. Just clearly. And I can't tell you the Vietnam veterans that are seeing these girls, these prostitutes in Vietnam, that as the spirit comes up and begins to speak out of them, they see the prostitute in their mind that they were involved with when that demonic spirit came in them. And it's amazing. You know, all the Vietnam veterans that are having all these struggles, it's amazing the guys that are coming for deliverance, that all those struggles that they have been for years in the veterans' hospitals are clearing up when they're dealing with the spiritual problem that they picked up visiting these temple girls overseas, when they were overseas. But transferal, it could be transferred. Now, are there any chiropractors here? Now, I want you to hear me. I love chiropractors. Not all of them. I am supported I couldn't be here if it wasn't for the chiropractors that give money for my account. I want you to understand that right off. But you need to know something about chiropractic. And I go to a chiropractor only when I am in excruciating pain. You know, when they don't go to touch me, I just wince. You know, I just somehow, I don't, people say, I just love it. I'm going, I don't love it yet. I hope I never do. It's like loving a dentist chair. You know, how can you love that? I hate it. Just the sound of it just gets to me. But the father of chiropractic, and I can't think of the man's name right now, was a best friend of Mesmer, who we get mesmerizing. Both these men were in the cult. And the purpose of chiropractic, if you go back and study the history of it, was to line your body up with the chi, which are the forces. So when you go to a chiropractor, you don't want to give yourself over to this fellow to do things to you if you don't know his worldview. I don't want a man lining me up with a spirit world. Do you? No. And there's all kinds of strange things people are doing today in medicine that is strictly, periodly demonic. You ought to talk to the medical doctors. We had 280 just a week ago, just before I came here. And these guys know guys that are doing strange stuff in diagnosis. One is to take a pen, hang it on a string, hold it over the patient, and the pen will point to what's wrong with the patient. And then they take out the gallbladder because that's where it pointed. And people say, oh, isn't it marvelous? It isn't marvelous. Or a man looks in your eyes and is going to do surgery because of what he sees in your eyes. And people are going and swearing by these people. The homeopathic thing, and I'm not saying all homeopathic medicines, but much of what's going on in the hill country all around here is strange. One thing that they do in Indiana, in the same groups of, you know, the folk medicine, they take an egg, a raw egg. A baby's sick. They take string, and I think it's 7 times the foot of the baby. It's not string, it's yarn. They take 7, they cut it off. They take a raw egg. They put the yarn around the egg. They put the egg in the fire. And the size and the sound of the popping of that egg tells you what's wrong with the child. You reach in the hot coals and you pull out the string and it's not burned, the yarn. It's not fireproof yarn. Nothing, not even singed. And they bury it. And you know that that group of people have the highest suicide rate of teenagers in America. People put a washcloth on a child's head and take it out and bury it in a certain corner. And all of this kind of thing is going on and the child gets better. Well, let me give you a story. I wasn't going to give you this one. It just popped in my head so you can have it. When I was in Africa and I was... Did I tell you about the guy in his wedding night? And the wife? And all that? Okay. I just told this to the doctors, so I don't want to tell you the same story twice. But this... Remember the gal I told you that the some of you know Rebecca DuBarry that was translating this African pastor came, who had known his bride to be for 4 years. I didn't tell you this. Okay, he'd known her for 4 years. In Africa, they don't date like we date, but he knew who she was and realized that she'd make a good helpmate. She was a born again believer. It'd be a tremendous wife for him. The people in the church thought it was good. His parents thought it were good. He married this girl. And they were in the parents' home, and as you know, in Africa, many families live together because they can't afford to live anywhere else but in the home. He went in to consummate the marriage. And when he went in to consummate the marriage, she was thrown to the floor. And she's laying on the floor having like a seizure, which she had never had one before, like an epileptic seizure. And he looked down, and as he was going for his wife, a voice spoke out of her and said, "Who are you?" And he knew it wasn't his wife. And he said, "I'm her husband." The voice said, "No, you're not. I'm her husband." And he said, "Well, when did you become her husband?" Said, "When she was 3. He knew what he was dealing with. He couldn't figure out what happened. He called his friends in and they tried to hold her down and finally got her back on the bed and all this. It was terrible. He says, "My wife is having seizures in church services." And he's weeping. And Rebecca's weeping. And I don't know what's going on. You hear the guy speaking in French. The translator's weeping. The guy is weeping. And I'm sitting there wondering, what is happening? You know, tell me what is going on here. As she was hearing the story and the torment of this pastor's wife. He called or contacted her parents and said, what happened when she was 3 years old that this would go on? And they said, when she was three, she almost died, and we took her to a juju man, and he healed her. A transference for healing, for her healing, she got a spirit. And up to that point had not left her. The pastor did not know what to do. And we shared with him some things to do. I have never been kissed by an African male as much as I was kissed by that pastor. I gave him hope. He didn't know what to do. His wife just falling on the floor at any time, not knowing when, but always during a preaching service or something like that. If there was no gospel or anything like that, no problem. But if there was some type of a service, she was almost, sometime during the service, would hit the floor and go into this type of thing. So you got the three ways. I want you to look at a psalm that just is so meaningful. Psalm 18. And we'll just kind of pick out some verses here, but it's a promise. Remember, we were sharing promises with you, and I want to share this promise, but if you will read the Psalms on the basis of warfare, you'll be amazed at what's in there. You'll be amazed as you relate to what David was claiming and hanging on to and to the Lord, what it said. And Psalm 18 is one of those awesome Psalms. I will love thee, O Lord, with my strength. The Lord is my rock, my fortress, my deliverer, my God, my strength in whom I will trust, my buckler, the horn of my salvation, and my high tower. I will call upon the Lord who is worthy to be praised. So shall I be saved from my enemies. Verse 17, he delivered me from my strong enemy and from them which hated me, for they were too strong for me. They went before me in the day of my calamity, but the Lord was my stay. He brought me forth unto a larger place, and he delivered me because he delighted in me. 28. For thou wilt light my candle. The Lord my God will enlighten my darkness. I love verse 34. Often, if you write me a letter, I may include verse 34a. He teaches my hands to war. Isn't that beautiful? He teaches my hands to be skillful in warfare. Verse 35, thou hast given me the shield of thy salvation. Verse 36, thou hast enlarged my steps under me, that my feet do not slip. Verse 37, I have pursued my enemy. Verse 39, thou hast girded me with strength unto the battle. Verse 40, thou hast given me the necks of my enemies, that I might destroy them that hated me. Verse 48, he delivered me from my enemies. Verse 49. Therefore I will give thanks unto thee. Great deliverance he gives to his king. And verse 50. But tremendous. We jumped quick. I mean, we could read it slowly, but you'd be amazed reading back through the Psalms how much he talks about battle and deliverance and the enemy and having victory over your enemies. And God wants us to have victory over our enemies. I'm trying to think which to go into next. I mentioned today that there's two things that young people do not like speakers to talk about, and that is dating and music. A lot of kids get themselves in serious trouble in dating relationships. And I think the thing that's frightening today for me is to see how aggressive the girls are in a dating relationship. When a girl calls a fellow and asks him for a date, if he accepts, he could do anything he wants to with that girl. I couldn't believe when our son was in high school, all the girls that called, and we'd answer the phone, and they'd say, oh, we want to talk to your son. Well, he's not here. He's out jogging or running or whatever he was doing. And they'd say, we had a problem with English, and I'm going, I bet. You want to come over for deliverance, honey? Yeah, I was amazed. You know, it's just, we're living in difficult times. But let me tell you, music is a real problem today. A real problem today. And I can't tell you how many teenagers have come to us in terrible bondage that were struggling with the wrong kind of music. And I remember one teenager I was dealing with. He was 14, and we were doing direct confrontation, which means we were speaking to the spirits and commanding them to speak back. And it was the first time I ever dealt with a demon that had come through music. I mean, it was now, I mean, it's so common, but at that time it was the first one. And the spirit spoke, and I said, what do you do? It was obvious this thing was up in him, and his eyes were all funny and everything. And I said, I'm a demon of music. What do you do? And he said, I'm pushing him towards rock. Well, he was already into rock, but probably satanic rock. And so I asked him, I said, well, when did you come in? And I thought the demon said to me, look it up. I'm not into that kind of music. We've never had it in our home, so I don't even know who these groups are. I know a little more now, but I don't want to know, and I don't want to know the songs. And so this young man, it's amazing, but as that demon was speaking, he saw himself a few years before. He was 15 maybe, and he saw himself as 12 in the back seat of a car with his brother and another fellow driving. It was just like that, flash in his mind. And I asked him if he was willing to bring his music under the control of the Spirit of God. The young man said yes. And on that basis, we commanded that spirit to leave. And afterwards, I said to the young man, because the enemy was gone and the young man was able to talk clearly and distinctly, and I said, what did the enemy mean when he told me to look it up? He said, Mr. Logan, he didn't say look it up. He said lick it up. Well, Lick It Up is a song by Kiss. And he remembers listening to that, getting into it in the back seat of the car with his brother and their friend driving. People would come to work and said, you had a teenager here last night, didn't you? And the CEF's property is a square mile property with a lake on it. It's huge. I said, well, how could you tell I had a teenager? He said, well, there's tapes all tore up in the parking lot. These kids would go out there in their car, and boy, the tapes would go after these spirits would speak at them. They didn't want a tape to go with them. We had a young man that came to me. This is one of the young men whose parents weren't in ministry. One of the first teenagers I worked with that was not either a missionary son or a pastor's son. And this young man came, and his mother called and said, my son needs to see you. And often when they bring the kids, the mother wants them to see me more than the kids want to see me. You know what I mean? My kid really wants to see you. And they shove him in the room and shut the door. You know, the kid's standing there. Oh, hi, kid. You know, can I tell you about a kid like that? This is so funny. This mother brought her kid. I was teaching at Calvary Bible College, and to get there, you had to go up huge hills. We had an ice storm, and this mother drove this boy in an ice storm to see me up these hills. In Kansas City in an ice storm, and downtown is no fun driving up these hills with signals in the middle of the hill with ice. But somehow she got there. I mean, I don't know how I got there. She got there. The kid came in. She said, my son wants to talk to you. She shoved him in, shut the door. The kid sat down and looked daggers at me. I said, do you want to talk to me? No. I said, well, leave. My mother will kill me. You know how long it took us to get here? I said, well, listen, I'll tell you what. I got lots to do. You could sit there. And how long do you want to sit? He said, an hour. I said, okay. Well, look at the watch. And when an hour is gone, you can go. So I sat there. I had so much to do. I was grading papers and all that stuff. Finally, I said, the hour's up. I said, you can go, but remember, this door swings both ways. You ever want to come back, come back. Thanks, Logan. I really like you. He walked out. About 3 months later, I saw his mother. She says, I don't know what you told my son, but boy, is he different. What a reputation. Oh, my. I was going to tell you something else, and I forgot the real story. That just popped into my mind. Oh, yes, this boy that came. His problem was when he would go to youth group, he'd look around, and his thought was, which girl should you rape and then murder? This would happen every Sunday night after Sunday night. He'd sit in the classroom at school. Christian girls, the thoughts were stronger than the girls at school. And he thought, there's something wrong. There's something not right. And so he came, and the kid had all kinds of problems. I mean, I can't even tell you. He's multiplied problems. That was just one of many, many problems. And so when I felt that he was ready and we could deal with it, we came against that spirit, because I knew. He said, I am going to do it. I know I'm going to do it. It's like I lose control. I am so afraid that some night I'm going to murder a girl, 15 years old. You hear about kids that say, you know, they shot their folks? You know, you just wonder, this nice kid. This would be a nice kid. Quiet, doesn't talk much to himself. You know, all those, what they think are good signs. As we commanded the spirits to speak, they were hooked up to slasher music. I didn't even know there was slasher music. It's music about rape and murder that kids listen to today. Horrible music. It's a form of rock music that is just absolutely vile. And this kid was listening to it all the time. And spirits had come into him through this horrible slasher music, now getting him to act out the very things he was listening to. We destroyed the music. The spirits left him. Those spirits left him. And he never had thoughts of rape and murder from that prayer time on, when we prayed with him. He went to the Christian bookstore, realizing he couldn't listen to that kind of music because what it had done to him, there was a correlation between the music. They left, he doesn't hear any. So he went and he bought, guess what? Christian, what do you suppose he bought? Rock. He bought Christian rock music, but he didn't tell me. So now he's playing the same music, but it's got different words. And I began to watch this kid go downhill, but I was traveling to these pastor seminars to the major cities in America, so I wasn't there that much with him. But I thought, there is something. I mean, we made a lot of progress, but there's regress now, but I didn't know what it was. He went from the rock music, after he was listening to it, it just didn't do it for him. He went back to regular rock. And that boy right now is in a mental hospital. A horrible mess, mentally. Horrible. And there was just a digression as he gave background to the enemy. Remember what it says in the Word, that it's possible when someone has gone through a deliverance, they can end up 7 times worse. This young man is 7 times worse. He was there. He told me he was there for 2 weeks. He's embraced New Age teaching. He believes now in reincarnation. Some fellow came and said, I know you have spirits. I knew he had spirits. We didn't have them all out because this guy had a lot of areas in his life that we had to work with. And this guy said, I will call your spirits into me and to myself. This was a New Age fellow. But he said, you must pray this prayer. Now here is a kid in an evangelical church, strong church. You must pray this prayer to St. Jude 6 times a day. And you cannot mention the name of the spirits that have come out of you, because if you do, they'll come back. So when I went to see him, he's really excited. He's praying to St. Jude. And he said, but I can't tell you the spirits. I said, well, I know what spirits came out of you. And he said, yeah, those. But I can't say them, they'll come back. I said, then they didn't go. You are one deceived young man. And then later on he said, they're back. And I said, I know they're back. They never went anywhere. And you just got deeper into this, getting into the New Age stuff. And it's just awful what is happening. His mother's weeping over him now. He's worse off as he went back to his music. Let me share another illustration of music. If you would like some music material, I would be glad to see that you get it. If you want to write your name, a whole booklet on this whole area that we can see comes to you. I'll see that you get it. And I know that if you're a missionary, that the organization, Bill Gothard's organization, the brand new booklet they put together on rock music is awesome. it's just awesome. It just came out, and I know he would send it to you. If you want it, put your name and address on it, and I will collect them. I'll call his sister on the phone, who is his secretary, and ask Laura if we can't send them, and they can send you those free. Now, don't ask for 100 of them. If you have one and you can use it, I know that they would make it available to you. I know that they would. An Awana missionary from Africa came to America just this just happened this year. First time ever in America. He's driving in a car. This is an African. He punches in the radio thing with another family, or someone punched it in, and he's hearing music. And they say, this is a Christian radio station. And he's listening. This man was a drummer. He drummed up spirits into people in his tribe. And as he was listening to this Christian radio station, he asked, why are they drumming up spirits in the background? Now, he's an Awana missionary. You can call Awanas to find this out. It's his name and everything is in the Gothard book. That's just one testimony. So this man was telling Bill. So Bill gave him $100 to go to the Moody bookstore to buy contemporary Christian music, and for this fellow to listen to the music and evaluate it as an African drummer who all of his life, up to the point of becoming saved and being a Awana missionary, called up spirits with the drums and went through and documented what songs used the same kind of drumming that he used to call spirits. That's just one testimony like this on one page of this book. And we have found that we cannot bring a young person to freedom unless they're willing to turn their music over to the Lord Jesus Christ, if they're having demonic problems. Now, I didn't say that if your son listened to this, that obviously we need to bring him here, we'll all hold him down and get him straightened out here on the floor. Did you hear me? See, don't take what I didn't say, take what I did say. We're saying if a young person has demonic problems and he's listening to rock music, this young person will not get free, and you could bring in men, professors that have done this longer than I have, that are credible men, and they'll tell you the very same thing. You cannot be listening to that kind of music and get free. So that's something you want to deal with. Another thing that is very dangerous that we're finding sweeping young people are these games, quote unquote games, occult games that kids are playing. I was teaching summer missionaries for CEF, these kids that go out during the summer in Missouri, and they were going to travel in the state of Missouri. There was a 15-year-old kid, and I spoke in the area of not grieving the Holy Spirit of God. And when I got through speaking, I looked over, and this boy was crying. 15-year-old boys don't like to cry in front of other 15-year-olds and 16- and 17-year-olds, but he was crying. My heart went out to him, so I just walked over and I said, is there anything I can do for you? And he said, no, everything's okay. And I thought, well, if everything's okay, why are you crying? You know, you just don't do this. So I sat down kind of on the edge of the platform, and they were giving all kinds of announcements. I walked over to him and I said, and this was nothing about warfare. I mean, nothing. It was just about the Spirit of God and getting their life right so that God could use them and they would be Spirit-filled messengers of the gospel throughout the whole state, winning children to Christ. This kid said, just out of the blue, he said, Mr. Logan, I've been in Dungeons and Dragons. And I said, oh. I said, could we... He said, but I burned it. And I said, good. I said, you know, it's amazing. Someone saw 60 Minutes or 30 Minutes or whatever those programs are, 20 Minutes, whatever they are on the radio, TV, and they had they'd taken off the television that expose that CBS did on Dungeons and Dragons. And I had it in my office. It's about 20 minutes. It was a half-hour segment, but 20 minutes would just... So would you want to come in and watch it? And it showed all the kids that committed suicide that year or murdered somebody that played Dungeons and Dragons that were dungeon masters and really into Dungeons and Dragons. So this was a TV special. So we sat in our office. I had a monitor. We played it. We got all through, and he said, I didn't tell you the whole truth. And I said, and I didn't know this kid. And I said, really? He said, yeah, I didn't. He said, I was a dungeon master. Now, a dungeon master is one who has to know all the curses, has to know many quotes from the Satanic Bible, so that they play by the rules. It's a very unusual game. They use unusual dice. And the dungeon master says what they can and cannot do, what their characters can do and cannot do, and how, who can kill what, and all this kind of thing. And so I had just heard that dungeon masters usually become demonized in the process of becoming a dungeon master by memorizing all these curses that you put on people and so on. So I didn't know. The first Dungeons and Dragons person, I've had lots of them since then, but this is my first one. So I asked this kid, I said, would you let me pray for you? He said, sure. So we have chairs that are wooden, a wooden back, wooden arms, not real fancy chairs, but you know, wooden chairs you can put your arms on. The kid was sitting in one of those. I said, can I just pray for you and just say, Lord, if there's anything here, let's tell it to leave, since you've already burnt it up. But if the enemy took an advantage of that and took ground in your life, we'll just take back, you burnt it, we'll take back the ground and pray against. Said, oh, that'd be super, Mr. Logan. He put his head between his knees. You know how kids pray? He just flopped over, had his head between his knees, his arms on the floor, and I always pray watching. I never pray not watching. I mean, I pray not watching in a regular prayer meeting, but this kind of things, I always watch to see what's going on here so I can stop and deal with something if I need to. And I just started praying to the Lord, and I said, Lord, if there's anything here in his life that came into him through Dungeons and Dragons, and he screamed, he went backwards, was thrown back, it's like I slugged him. He was thrown backwards in the chair rocked back, thought it was going on the floor, came down, his head went up, his eyes rolled in his head, and he gurgled. And I just said, in the name and authority of Christ, you leave him and you go where Jesus Christ sends you. And he said, did you see that? I said, yeah, I was sitting right across from you. He said, that was powerful. I'm going to tell all the kids at church. I said, I don't think I would. Because your church can't handle it. There's a Baptist church where the pastor was in a meeting I was at. There was 1,000 pastors there, and the pastor was there. And I shared it. He didn't know. At that time, I knew who he was and knew what he was doing. But one of them in the church says, you know, our head deacon is getting people in the church to play Dungeons and Dragons at his house on Friday nights. I don't think that that's a proper thing for a deacon to do. And they told this man that he was critical and probably should leave the church. Not the dungeon master, who was a deacon, but the man in the church who wondered if this is something that the deacon should be having people over his house for every Friday night. And the pastor stood with the dungeon master. And the pastor was in there. And when I shared this, I was so glad. The pastors were a little more groany than you were. They were going, oh. I'm like, good, did you hear it? Wake up, guy. This is not a game. This is introduction into the occult. And we could go on with games. What kind of games do your kids play? Are they playing occult-type games? Should missionaries' kids be involved in occult games, even if they're fun? What kind of Nintendo games do you have? Occult type? You can get Dungeons and Dragons in Nintendo. Are your kids dabbling in darkness? Because they may get more than what they bargained for in the dabbling and start having serious trouble. And you need to watch. A father should watch over his home. He is the protector. To be sure that the kids are protected from that kind of thing. There's a lot of games out there. They don't need to be doing occult games. And you know, Ouija boards, we could go on and on and on in these kinds of things. One of our CEF missionaries, tremendous fellow, went to, some of you may know, he went to Indonesia, was a Satanist, more of a self-styled Satanist, before he became a Christian. He had all kinds of tools. He would call demons up in full-length mirrors. You know, he had a full-length mirror, you know, the kind that you could turn, and he would call them up, and the demons would speak to the people that would gather. He had all kinds of things that he used in making money. That's how he made his living. He made his living by doing this type of thing, channeling spirits and all this kind of stuff. This guy still has strange eyes. Now, he's free, but he has been so in the occult that when you look at his eyes, there's something not good about him. But Larry is doing super. I mean, he's fine. I've talked to Larry. I said, Larry, are you sure you're good? You got spooky eyes. And he said, Logan, I'm clean. It's just so long that he allowed spirits to speak out of him and channel spirits to people and all this, that there's still something about his eyes. He took all of his stuff when he got saved, and he burned it and broke it. And then he went and he got one of the things that he used a lot, which is a pendulum, which is a crystal on a chain that he would hang. And this crystal would spell out messages with no one touching it. It would move like the pencil, but this was a crystal on a chain. He decided he needed to destroy it. I just want you to see the occult significance to this stuff. He took it, and he took it in his garage, and he took a mallet, I mean, what do you call it, 2-pound hammer or something like that, and was beating this thing. It couldn't even chip it, and it's only glass. He put it in his vise, and he vised it down and put a cheater and bent the vise, but nothing happened to the crystal. So he took it out of the vise, and he said, let's go, I'm going to throw it out at the city dump. So they went out, and he threw it as far as he could into the city dump. They lived outside of Seattle in a smaller area. And when they got back home, he went into the bedroom, and there in the box was the crystal. It beat him home. And he's a brand new Christian. He said, Lord, if you don't make this stay in the dump, I don't know what to do with it. I can't destroy it. It won't burn. I can't break it. You've got to make it stay in the dump. So they put it back in, and he and his wife, the kids, got back in the car, and they drove to the dump, and they threw it as far as they could in the dump. And when he said, Lord, you keep it here, it stayed in the dump outside of Seattle. I gotta watch my time. I was going to read you this letter, but I can't. It was in my prayer letter. If you'd like to get my prayer letter, you may find it very helpful. We have testimonies of people in there that are credible. This last prayer letter this is a testimony of an IFCA pastor, and the other testimony is of a missionary son who has become a medical doctor. And his deliverance, and he didn't write his testimony until he'd been delivered from demonic sexual powers for over 8 months. And he wrote his testimony of the 8 months of freedom and the change in his life after he got those things dealt with. And so the next one has the testimony of the boy who was 14 years old, whose father was ahead of all the outreach for the Iron Curtain countries, had to come home because his son got full of demons through listening to rock music in Vienna, Austria. Tremendous testimony of that boy, and then a testimony of a pastor in his struggles. But we wait at least, sometimes it's a year, a year and a half before we will allow someone to write a testimony that we put out. We want to be sure that the person is walking in victory and that the deliverance is totally complete. But I can't read you this whole thing, but just let me tell you this story. This pastor was extremely exhausted, and they said to him, how would you like to go to our condo in Arizona? And he said, super. So this fellow loaned him his condo, and they drove to this condo, neat. They couldn't afford something like this, beautiful to stay. They went in there, and they sat down in that evening and ate. It was late. They went to bed. There was nothing. The next morning, he got up, went out in the living room, opened his Bible to have his devotion, and his mind was flooded with the most evil, wicked thoughts. And he's going. And he said, Lord, and he asked God's forgiveness for this. But it wouldn't go away. His mind was flooded again and again and again with wicked, evil thoughts. And he thought, this is not me. You know, I don't struggle with these kind of things when I have devotions. And he looked around, and it says, about this time the Lord seemed to impress me with the idea there may be some object in the room through which Satan was able to exert some evil influence. And so, after not seeing anything, couldn't figure anything out, he prayed and asked God to direct him to whatever object may be the source of trouble. And as he continued to sit there reflecting on unique problems, he looked around the room, and all of a sudden, he saw a small black statue, hand-carved, the kind you would pick up in a novelty store. It just looked like a harmless thing on the top of the bookcase about 5 inches high. He walked over, picked it up, and he turned it around. To his utter amazement, there was a little sticker on the back of this thing. It said, "The God of Success." And there followed a little prayer, which if one prayed, if they needed success, would get success. If they would pray to this little object and pray the prayer on the bed. He told his wife, they took the thing into a spare bedroom. Now, he couldn't destroy it because it wasn't his. So he took it in a spare bedroom. He opened the bedroom, the door, and opened the closet, put it face down in the closet, and asked God to keep it there, and any powers associated, keep it there because it wasn't his. They went through the whole rest of the vacation with no problems like that coming into his mind. Then when they got back, He said they called the owners of the condominium to thank them for staying there and so on. And he said, "You'll never guess what we experienced at your condominium." To which the fellow who owned it says, "Don't tell me. Let me guess. Was it something related to that little black statue on the bookshelf?" The pastor was utterly amazed that he should think that. Well, the incident was related to the owner of the building. He said he responded that the idol had been received at a Christmas party where you couldn't give a gift over $2. And the man who got the idol got it at a garage sale and gave it to this man that stuck it on a shelf. And he said, "We were always going to throw it away," and they threw it away. The first secretary for the Togo Embassy asked if I would come and pray over their children. The first secretary is the one who takes over when the ambassador's gone, and her sister is the ambassador in Washington, D.C. So they asked me to come, and I came to the home. Of course, they speak French. I don't speak French. I had an interpreter. We prayed over the children as they brought them into the living room. She has tons of kids, and some that were there. We prayed over everybody's kids, I think. And we prayed over the kids. They were all Christians. This is a Christian family. And they're moving into a new home. They said, "Would you come to our home and dedicate our home to the Lord and pray God's protection?" So we went to another section there in Accra to this beautiful home that was being painted. And this home had two sections. It had a living room with sleeping quarters upstairs and then another whole section. And you went in and there was an open courtyard that you could walk upstairs and you could go both ways. Well, I went, and this house is empty. And they had the doors locked into the section where the children would be sleeping upstairs. It was a big, big balcony-like. And I went, and I put my hand on the door, and I began to pray God's cleansing on this empty house. And as I was praying, my hand was being pushed off the door by nothing. I mean, nothing you could see. And I never said a word. I'm just praying. My interpreter is putting more oomph in my prayer than I am, as he's doing it in French to the first secretary and her husband and those that were there. And we got through praying. He looked at me. He says, "Jim, there were spirits there." I thought, how did he know? I mean, how did he know? I was the one who had the hand on the door, and it was my hand being pushed off as we prayed. And when we finally commanded it to leave, everything left. I mean, my hand, there was no more pushing against the hand on that door. He said, "I saw them. They were Chinese spirits." They checked out later on. It had been the Chinese embassy. People had lived in there, and we got rid of them. Now, we want to keep this in balance. Please keep it in balance. Don't go home and throw out everything. Anything of value, call me first. I'll bring my suitcase over. When I was speaking in Oklahoma last year, my wife got a telephone call at 2 o'clock in the morning from one of the, in fact, it was the father of the 14-year-old boy. Remember the 14-year-old boy I mentioned that they had to leave? His father was a deacon in a church, and he called, and the other deacon happens to be one of the vice presidents of child evangelism. They called my wife at 2 o'clock in the morning, and he said, "Can we come over? It's about Jim." Or she thought it was about Jim, and she thought it was me, and something had happened to me, and that's why they called her 2 in the morning, and she got so nervous. She didn't hear what they said. She thought maybe I was dead or who knows what. Why would someone call 2 o'clock in the morning? Well, these two deacons came over and they said there's demonic involvement in one of the families of the church there. It's an IFCA Bible church that we were going to. And they said there's a family there that there's a demonic problem in that house and they don't know what to do. And the whole family is terrorized. Tell us what to do. We don't know what to do. So my wife told them what to do and they went over to the house and they dealt with it. And let me share this house, because they kind of put it under wraps, and I went over. One night, the 22-year-old boy who was down in the basement of the house, he had one door that went out. There was a noise. He was in his bed. He was not asleep. And at the bottom of his bed, up stood this black creature that had on his football jacket and a chain around his neck with an upside-down triangle. No face, just a black glob standing there. It just frightened him to death. But he wasn't going to stay in the room with it, so he went down to the end of the bed and was going to slug his way out And when he slugged at it, the jacket fell to the floor, it disappeared, and he ran out, and he ran upstairs, because his bedroom went this way, and there was a door, there are two doors, the door to the kitchen was right next door, and you'd open the door and go up the stairs into the kitchen. He ran upstairs, his mother said, "Don't tell the rest of the family about this." So she said, "Okay, she won't tell." So the next day, a few days later, the 7-year-old boy is playing Nerf basketball. The only door in the house that squeaks is, guess which door? This basement door. And he heard the door squeaking open, the 7-year-old. Knew nothing about anything. And around the corner, this is in the daytime, around the corner comes this black thing with a triangle upside down. Well, over the period of a year, every single child has seen this thing except one, and the mother keeps saying, "Don't say anything about it." This particular night, they were all in bed, the door opened downstairs, the kitchen door opened and closed, and they heard a girl, one of the girls in the family, she's now at Bob Jones, heard walking up the stairway, walking down the hall. It opened the door. The girls sleep on trundle beds, so one's high, one's low. And the girl on the lower bed was awake. The girl on the other bed was sound asleep. And there was a dresser that had those little things that you lift up and, you know, open a dresser with. She felt this thing come behind the bed. She didn't want to look at it. It came over and it flipped those things on the dresser. And then she heard it walk behind. This room's a real small, it was a house, and it walked over, and she knew it was over her sister. Somehow she knew, and she looked. She thought, maybe if I look at it, it'll go away. And it went down to the edge of the bed. Then it came over this girl, and it started entering her leg. And as I'm just telling you the story, this teenager told us, and these fellows from CEF. And as the spirit came into her leg, slowly, her body was going numb, and the pieces of her body were being put together in front of her, so that everything up in the air there was everything but her head. Somehow, I mean, this is what the girl told me. She said, "Mr. Logan, I thought, well, when my head gets up there, maybe I'll be dead. I've got to do something." So it took all her might to sit up in the bed, and she thought, "What will I say to my sister?" And she said, "Oh, no, I'll tell her I'm sick, because she doesn't want to clean up the mess, and so she'll get Mom." So she said, I won't say the girl's name, she said to the girl. The girl woke up. She said, "What's wrong?" She said, "I'm sick. Get Mom." She says, "I don't know where Mom is," and lay back down and went to sleep. Which the girl later on could hardly realize it happened. It took her a couple days to remember that even took place. The girl forced herself out of bed, got her mother up, and was just having a terrible time. When they would read verses about the blood of the Lamb, she could begin to talk and tell what happened. Fire was going through her body. She told her mother not to touch her. She said, "Put your hand close to me, mother. You could feel the fire that's burning in my body," and so on. Well, then they called these men. They came to the house. My wife said, "Well, this is, I think, what Jim would do." So they went over there scared to death, not knowing what to do. And everyone saw this black thing with the upside-down triangle. They went in. They prayed God's protection. They commanded this thing to leave and go. Well, the only one saw it go was the girl, and she saw it come out of her leg and go back downstairs. Well, we came to go through the house and to cleanse the house. Because for some reason, and I could tell you story after story after story about houses, we get these calls every day about houses, experiences, things like that going on in a home, frightening everybody to death. And we went through that house room by room by room. I kept looking, is there anything here? Prayed through the house, we cleansed the house, dedicated it to the Lord. We also cleansed the ground. Many people miss the ground. Taiwan, the seminary over there, the students were having horrible problems, and they kept praying through the seminary, but all of a sudden they looked and realized that the seminary was on a Buddhist cemetery. And as soon as they dedicated the ground to the Lord, guess what happened? All the nightmares, all these strange things stopped when they gave the ground to the Lord. So we gave the ground around the house, we gave everything to the Lord, and commanded the spirits never to come back, and they never have. But this is amazing. When I was in Africa, we went up to this, I won't go into that because our time is going, a real wicked place. It was the most evil part of the city I've ever been in. We went down, we went to see the dye pits, where these pits were 500, 600 years old, where they dye cloth. We went down little teeny alleys. This guy's going to sell us stuff out of his house. And we went into the house. I was with the president of CEF. I was with this was in April, the guy who's over all the missions for Child Evangelism Fellowship, and their wives, myself, the African, a vice president of a bank in Africa. There was a whole bunch of us there. We went into this little teeny courtyard, and this guy had cloth for sale. And on the wall, he had necklaces hanging. And guess what was hanging on that wall in that Africa hut? A necklace with an upside-down triangle hanging. And I almost bought it, but I didn't think I should. But I thought, you know, just because it was exactly as these kids described they saw on this thing. I want to go on because there's some things that are really significant. And we always think it's always associated, you know, I brought this thing back from Papua New Guinea. I better burn it. Why? Why are you going to burn it? Why are you going to get rid of it? You know, is everything that a national makes demonic? No. Do I hear you? No. People have thrown away and gotten rid of things they should have never thrown away and gotten rid of. First of all, if there's nothing happening in your house, why bother to throw stuff out? If nothing's going on, the kids aren't having nightmares, if nothing's going on there and there's nothing strange, why do you want to throw stuff out? But if something is going on, you need to say, why is something going on, right? I mean, it's only smart. Something is happening in this house. Why is it happening? Is there something? A lady, her children started having nightmares. Wake up screaming night after night. She left her husband. She moved to a small apartment. She thought it must be the traumatic experience of my husband running off. But all of a sudden, she realized that the twin beds that the boys were sleeping in, that they were screaming in, her sister gave them to her from two homosexuals. And here, all the evil committed in that bed, and she couldn't afford to throw the beds out. So she dedicated the beds to Christ and commanded anything associated with the bed that was tormenting those kids to leave, and guess what happened? Nothing happened after that. The kids were able to sleep in the beds with no problem. There was this one. I want to share another house. Just this happened just before I came here. Got a telephone call from Connecticut, Dallas Seminary pastor. Said they didn't teach me in Dallas how to deal with this. You know Ron Blue? Ron Blue called me and said, Jim, tell me about that pastor. We need to get the fellows at Dallas Seminary understanding the work of the enemy. They're not prepared to go out here and pastor churches. They don't know what's going on. But this is what happened. Here is a family, and when they're in bed, the beds go up and down. Trunks are pulled across the attic, but there's no trunks up there. Cupboards will open, and dishes will fly out of the cupboards. The only thing they knew that good Bible people don't know what to do about this, so they called a Catholic exorcist to come in. So they got this Catholic exorcist to come to the house, and he came to the house, and he was upstairs, and he said, all right, I think we ought to pray. When he said that, he was picked up, thrown against the wall, and slid down the wall, got up, and walked out of the house. So they went to the pastor, and they said, what do we do? Well, there was a missionary there from Africa who's going to come and do some internship with me that knows that demons are real, but he doesn't know what to do. And he says, I was in Africa, I couldn't help the people. But he said, Jim, I saw it, and I'm going, this. He says, Pastor, it's got to be real. I mean, you've got a whole family talking about strange things going on in this brand new home. And so when they said they're going to call the deacons over there, the deacons' wives told their husbands, you don't dare go over, you'll bring something home. I mean, can't you see where our mentality is? Where's our protection? Didn't we learn about that today? I mean, if God hasn't got any more protection than that, let's throw in the towel. Well, they went to the home, and it was amazing. The family all stood outside, and they don't have to do this. When they went through the home, because I called and asked what happened, when they went through the home, the spirits rushed out the front door. Did they have to go out the front door? No, but they did, and they bumped the family standing on the sidewalk as they were leaving the property. All of them were bumped. And they said, did you feel that? Yeah. What happened to you? I got bumped. In fact, I was punched. One girl said, I think it pinched me. You know, out they went. But you know what we miss often is we miss the dirt. You know this family that lived in the new home that this black thing was coming in? You know what we think? You know, we kept thinking, why? Brand new home. Why? There wasn't statues from anywhere. The only family that lived in there, a very conservative Christian family. Why? The ground probably was Indian burial ground, because we know there was a lot of Indian activity there, and that ground may have been set aside to the spirits. And when you build a house on it, they used it to attack this family. I don't understand. I know they're not under attack anymore. In 2 years, this family was tormented by this thing walking around, frightening them to death, and they didn't have to go through that torment at all. A father called me on the telephone. He said, "I'm an executive, Mr. Logan. Can I talk to you?" And I said, "You're fortunate. I just happen to be between counselees. I've got a moment." He said, "Let me go in my office." He went in his private office, and he started sobbing over the phone. He was from many states away, and this man is sobbing. And I said, "Sir, what is wrong?" He said, "My wife today walked in and found our 7-year-old with a butcher knife. She was going to stab the baby." And she said, my 7-year-old all of a sudden has the strangest behavior. We don't know what to do with her. Should we put her in a mental hospital?" He said, "I don't know what to do." My wife says, "I am not going to be responsible. I can't watch that baby every moment. Will she kill that baby when my back is turned? I can't stand that kind of pressure." And they were in a mess. I said, "You know, that's just not natural for a Christian family. That's not normal in a Christian family." I said, "I believe there's enemy involvement." He said, "That's why I called your center." He said, "I just believe it has to be something demonic that our little daughter all of a sudden would start having this strange behavior." And I said, "You know, I have some material that we send out to parents to pray over their children while they're asleep." We had some missionaries come. Both the father and mother missionary had tremendous demonic problems. They were gloriously set free. They said, "Our problems were so bad, we're sure that if ancestral demons, if that is really true, our children must have some demonic problems. Mr. Logan, should we deal with our children?" And I said, "Here is some material. Read it through. And here is a prayer in there, how you could pray for your children." But I said, they said, "We're going to do it now." And I said, "No, don't do it now. The Lord will let you know. But do it while they're sleeping. Children do not need a traumatic experience. Just read the prayer over them or learn how to pray over the children." Well, that night, a boy got up, walked across the hall. They're at CF headquarters. They walked across the hall. The oldest boy, he was 8 years old, and he was crying. And the dad said, "Why are you crying?" Now, they didn't know anything about the demonic. They didn't know why their mom and dad were there. And they did not know their mom and dad had gone through, both of them, a deliverance and a freedom from the bondage that both of them had had for years. He said, "Why are you crying?" And he said, "I dreamed that dream again." He said, "What dream?" He said, "I dreamt, I woke up, and everybody was dead." And the dad said, "I don't know why I asked this question." I said, "Did you dream that you killed us?" "Yes." And he started sobbing and crying. And the dad said, "That's it." He said, "I command you in the name and the authority of Lord Jesus Christ to get out of my son's life and to go." And the kid stopped crying and he said, "They didn't all leave yet, Dad." And he did it again and the kid went back to bed. They said, "This is the night." They went and they prayed over the other boy. He was 5 years old. They said, "Mr. Logan, I wish you could have seen it." As they prayed over that boy, this doesn't always happen, that little boy was thrown back and forth as they were praying, sound asleep from one end of the bed to the other, just like this as they were praying over him. The next day, the little boy did not know he was prayed over. The next day, that little boy got up, walked across the hall where his mom and dad was. He says, "Guess what?" They said, "What?" He said, "Those voices aren't talking to me anymore." Isn't that beautiful? He didn't even know he was sound asleep. And we say, use the least intrusive method as possible with your children. Well, back to this little baby and the butcher knife. You don't want to go to bed without knowing what happened to that. I don't want you to lay at night trying to figure that one out. I sent him that material. And they waited till she was asleep, and they went in the bedroom, and they agreed. They looked through the home to be sure that everything was right, and they were right with the Lord, and they prayed that prayer. And he called me and said, "Mr. Logan, it's really wonderful. She's doing super." And I was so excited. But about 2 months later, I get a phone call, and he's crying again, and he said, "She's as bad or worse. She had the butcher knife again at the baby." And my wife says, "We just can't go like this." And I said, "There's got to be something. There's no way that that little child has done anything themselves, because God protects them, that that child could have done something themselves in some way to get full of demons that would try to murderous, violent spirits. I said, it just can't be. And I asked this question. I said, do you have any artifacts? I've never asked that question before. They said, yeah, we do. In fact, we have a missionary that we call Uncle. And he has given us things. And I'm going, because there's nothing else on them. They don't watch television. They don't have a TV. They don't have rock music. I mean, there's none of that kind of stuff. So, you know, if that would be way out, there's none of that going on. So I said, well, what do you have? And he said, well, I have a mask. And I thought, ah, good, a mask. You know, they use those in dancing and worship. He said, the missionary carved it. And I'm going, no, that's not it. And then he said, well, I got a tie tack. And I'm going, tie tacks? I've got more than that from Africa. You know, that's just a tourist thing. That can't be it. He said, I've got a basket, but it's new, and it was woven by Christians. I said, no, that's not it. He said, but we do have one thing. It's an old musical instrument. I said, you know, I wonder if that musical instrument was used in calling spirits. That may be the thing. He said, well, I think I'm going to take all the stuff, put it in a box, and put it in the garage, and tell a missionary to come and get it. So he took all the stuff, he put it in the garage, because he didn't want anything because of the violent behavior of the child. And he prayed, Lord, if there's, I don't want anything in this home, cleanse this home from anything here. They called the missionary. The violent behavior has stopped. It's been 2 years. They called the missionary and said, you know, we didn't want to destroy this stuff because you gave it to us, but we would like you to have it. The missionary came over to get the things, and this is what he said. I want you to know that I'm really hurt. He said, I've been a missionary in Africa for many, many years, and I want you to know one thing. Our people did not worship spirits. They only worshiped idols. What does it say in Corinthians? Paul said, I am not concerned that you worship idols. They cannot hear, they cannot speak, they cannot see. But when you worship idols and make sacrifice to idols, you are sacrificing to what? Demons. Now don't go home and throw out everything from Papua New Guinea. You promise me that, remember? Out of balance, isn't that what Satan wants you to do? Clean the house out, throw everything out. Maybe you ought to throw the kids out too. They were born there. You know. And this one we don't mind. Don't do that. Don't. That is the enemy. That is of the enemy. But if you have something strange going on, and if you have something that was used in worship, maybe you need to get it out of your house to see if it's that. Not everything. You realize that, don't you? And I know people get into extremes. I mean, people come in my office and I have all this stuff from all over the world and they're almost afraid to sit down for fear that I've got all this demonic stuff on my cadenza. You know, it's just carvings and stuff that have no significance at all, demonic. Be wise, would you? This is important. I want you to know, I can't tell you the people that are struggling because of things in their home that they need to get rid of. But if nothing is happening, don't throw things out. But one other thing, don't have evil in your home. And I'm not talking about stuff you brought from the mission field. I mentioned this before. I cannot tell you the young men who were in bondage, sexual bondage, that got into bondage from their father's hidden pornography. The father did not even know that his son found it between the mattress and the box spring. I've asked kids, how did you find it? I mean, you can't get a teenage boy close to a mattress and box springs. You know, here he's got his hand under it, and he pulls out his dad's magazine. Guess who led him there? Or the kid, I mean, we have kids, they say, you take out the bottom dresser drawer, you pull it all the way out, and on the floor, guess what's there? Playboy. My dad's Playboy. Stuff like that. And the kids get into pornography and into bondage. The parents don't know anything about. You know, often what parents will allow in moderation, their kids will take to excess. And the enemy will use that which is not right. And maybe a father says, well, I don't have any real, I don't see how anybody can say I don't have a real problem with this. But their kids go into tremendous bondage. A pastor came up to me one time, and he shared this at one of the pastor seminars. It's so neat. His son he heard this somewhere about the magazines between the mattress and box springs. And The son reached his hand under his pastor father's bed, and between the mattress and box springs, there was a magazine. And the kid grabbed a hold of it, and his heart sunk. And he pulled it out, and the magazine was Holiness to the Lord. Praise the Lord. Yeah. Father, we pray for wisdom. Oh, Lord. If something is going on in our homes, if our children are waking up screaming, Lord, may we be wise. And if there's something there that is of the enemy, Lord, lead us to it. Give us that inner witness that this needs to go. Lord, may we not be extreme. But Lord, may we realize that places and things that have been dedicated to the enemy often will have forces of darkness attached to it. Give us wisdom, Father, as we seek to be wise moms and dads. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.